Okay, we're dropping in hot here. We have Benjamin Scottford with a question asking, joining in from Australia, is whining in the backyard a self-rewarding behavior? I love this. Is there ever a time when it's best to let the puppy cry it out?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, it is kind of a self-rewarding behavior, Benjamin. It sort of depends on what they're whining about. You know, if they're whining in the backyard because they are like wanting to come inside and they're trying to like communicate with you, then, you know, there's whining where they're trying to be communicating, and then there's whining to the point where they're like just being maybe a bit irritating in the moment, or yeah, or it's just like a soothing behavior. Sometimes when dogs are whining, it can be a challenge because they don't even know that they're doing it. So our take on it is, if it's something like they're outside and they want to come in and they whine a little bit, that might be a good indicator for you to go and let them in. But if it's sort of something that you would prefer them not to do, the best thing to do for whining is to interrupt them. So if you have a leash or a line on the dog when they're outside, you could say a command like quiet or that's enough. Or sometimes I find myself saying to my dog, you're fine. Like, get over it. You're fine. And then I would just take the leash and make the dog sit, or I might redirect them to a different location, or I might bring them inside, or just redirect their brain so that they're not thinking about it. There was a second part of the question, but you have eliminated it onto me and I can't see it anymore. Is there, okay, no problem. That's okay. I gotta know. Is there ever time that you should just let a dog cry it out? Depends on the age, and it depends on the experience level of the dog. So if the dog's been around for a bit, I would not allow the dog to cry it out. If the if you have a brand new puppy and they're like whining in their crate or whining in some brand new circumstances, then I might give the puppy a bit more grace in that situation. And then after a day or two, I would start to address it. So it sort of does depend on the situation and the age of the puppy.
One of the first big mistakes that people make, I see Tiffany Smith dropping a super chat. I haven't tooted yet tonight. This is the show with the most toots.
Thank God.
But Tiffany's dropped a super chat. Our moderators will keep an eye out for Tiffany's question. So the first big mistake that people make is feeding everything. And this is important to really, we use a lot of food in training. Food is a valuable resource. It's naturally understood to be worth something to a lot of puppies and,
hey,
yeah, and dogs. We have our deaf dogs who are having a party in the back there. But one thing that you have to start, what that doesn't mean is that you're going to just constantly have food in your dog's face all the time. In fact, when we're starting to teach a puppy to work for food, I use that term very intentionally, we are going to take advantage of times when they're already hungry. You know, we're going to do training at mealtimes. This doesn't matter, and I'm going to say, puppy, if you have a dog who's like 8 or 9 months old and you're like, well, this isn't for me, this is for you.
Yeah.
So you're going to take advantage of that time. But what I want you to start to do after those first few days home, that might be a little bit more relationship building and you're not really asking much of the dog as they get acclimatized to your home, I want you to start thinking about being really critical of, why am I rewarding this? What am I feeding for? Because something that a lot of people do is they'll feed for everything. They'll just feed. And actually, I have a video that I want you guys to check out. I just grabbed a clip here. And actually, let's talk a little bit more about this. And then we'll dive into this clip, because this the clip is a little off topic.
So the common mistakes with feeding is, as Ken said, people end up feeding everything and then the dog may become dependent on the food. But the other thing that sometimes people will do is they'll feed at the wrong times. And so it to them. So I can give you an example.
Okay, stop right there. I love this. But let's watch this.
If that's where we're going,
this is good. This is the wonders of a live stream. This is exactly what we're talking about. Isn't it fun that I grabbed this clip?
Yeah, very fun.
Okay, let's dive into this together, Kel. You ready?
Another common mistake that people make is rewarding their dog with food, but in the wrong position. So, for example, if I've asked Funky to sit or lie down and I go to give her a reward, and just as I'm about to feed her, she ends up standing up, we have a lot of people that say, good, and they feed their dog anyways. And what starts to happen is the dog learns that when you say sit and you approach them, they're going to stand up for the treat every single time. So keep in mind that what you've asked your dog to do needs to be reinforced in that position to strengthen the skill. So if I want to teach Funky to sit, when I reward her, I'm going to feed her in a way that she still continues sitting. Yes, I might raise my hand above her nose a little bit more, keeping that weight in her bum so she doesn't pop up for the sit. Good girl, good sit. Same thing for the down. If people reward in the down, we have a lot of people that say yes, and they pull their food further away, and the dog pops up out of position, and we reward anyways. This can create...
Okay, so what are... this is? I thought this was a pretty good example of what are you feeding? So in this case, Kale's showing...
You should make us bigger.
Kale's showing with a sit command.
Being a bossy boots.
And she was rewarding Funky, and you're probably doing this. She was rewarding Funky out of position. Or imagine, and this is so common, people ask their dog to sit or stay, was a really common one. Mm-hmm. They'll ask their dog to do a behavior, and then the dog does it, and then they release them. The dog comes over and then sits in front again. But we want that sit to mean sit, park your bum right there, and I'll come to you to reward. Mm-hmm. So in the beginning, don't mean to take this. In the beginning, sure. You want to be very intentional about when you're feeding and why you're feeding. Why am I rewarding this behavior?
Mm-hmm. And then also you need to watch your timing. Forgetting the name now, whoever just asked the question.
Oh, for the super chat?
I'm having a brain fart.
Benjamin?
Benjamin. When Benjamin had asked about the whining, this reminds me of like timing. There's lots of times when dogs will whine and then they'll stop whining and people will say yes and sure. They'll give the dog a reward. Well, that's another situation where, you know, giving a dog treats is maybe not the best idea because there's a lot of dogs that if your timing is too quick or, you know, not really in the right order, the dog will start to put together, I whine, you tell me quiet, and then you give me a treat. So if I whine... you'll tell me to be quiet and then you'll give me a treat. So they just start whining on purpose.
Sure.
So it's really important that if you are going to reward that you're intentional about it and also you have a strong understanding of the timing in which you should actually do it so that you end up enhancing the behaviors that you actually want and you don't accidentally continue on a path that maybe you were hoping to not be on in the first place. But sometimes because we just want to feed everything, we accidentally reward things we don't mean to, and then that gives the dog a different idea.
The other thing along the lines of timing is something that's so, so common. And I'll tell you, the amount of people who say like, well, I don't want to train my dog with food because I don't want to have food. I don't want to require food, which will happen with bad timing. You will require food forever if you don't use your timing correctly. Mm-hmm. And something people will often do is put the treat on their dog's nose, say the command, and then do whatever the stimulus, maybe they lift up for a sit or they hear or whatever the thing is. Now, this is okay in the very beginning with a puppy. When we're just showing them like there's value to be in this position. So maybe I'm luring a sit. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm luring a down. Maybe you've watched a bunch of our puppy videos and this is not news to you. But you do have to be really careful about when you start using your voice. As a new puppy owner, you need to be conscious about when you're using your voice and make sure that the focus isn't the food if you're starting to issue a command or, mm-hmm. or give your dog some a cue of some kind.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
We got a super chat from Tiffany. And Tiffany asks, when he says, hi, I have an 8-month-old Yorkie and he barks at me alone, no one else. I think it's attention barking and ignoring it doesn't work.
You're right. Ignoring it doesn't work.
Yeah.
You're on the right track. Yep.
And Tiffany dropped 2 super chats because she didn't add there. So thank you, Tiffany. That's really nice. So this is going to be a double super chat style answer.
Okay. Yes. Ignoring. This is actually sort of in the same vein as what Benjamin was asking about the self-rewarding. You know, ignoring a dog for barking at you, especially when it's attention barking or demand barking, and you just ignore them. It normally doesn't work. Sometimes it works, like it may work, but normally it doesn't because barking is a very self-rewarding behavior. And at some point, you know, if you ignore them and then you turn back around or you move or you eventually go get the ball or you eventually let the dog up on the couch or you eventually do that thing, the dog starts to have your number a little bit. So
yeah, who's training who at that point?
Yeah, dog's training you at that point.
Yeah.
So what you need to do, Tiffany, is you need a command that you can say that identifies to the dog that you don't like what they're doing. Again, it could be quiet, it could be enough, whatever it might be. And then I might have a leash or a line attached to the dog so that I can actually follow through with whatever I'm going to ask the dog to do next. So typically if the dog's doing demand barking, I usually would ask, so I would tell the dog to be quiet. And then from there, I would have the dog do something that puts me in the driver's seat. So yeah. It literally could be something as simple as asking the dog to sit. Yeah. So the dog barks, hey, quiet, that's enough, sit. Once the dog sits, good, sit. Now I have an opportunity to positively reinforce something that the dog's doing for me. But sometimes what happens is if the dog's in a attention barking mode where they're being maybe a bit of a saucepot, bit sassy, you could say sit and the dog might say whatever, bark, 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 bark. And what happens next is really what's going to change everything, because typically what people will then do is they'll say sit again, or they'll tell the dog to be quiet again, or they won't follow through. And this is where that leash and line is really crucial, because if I said quiet and I've asked you to sit and now you've said, nah, I don't really feel like listening, all I need to do is very calmly repeat sit a second time and then use the leash to make the dog sit. I could place the dog into a sit, I could lift up on the leash, but what I'm not going to do is sound like a broken record and say it a million times. I'm not going to get out treats and bribe the dog, because those things teach the dog that they're still running the show. And then they end up getting something really great in the end. So you do want to be very careful about that. So again, mark the behavior, interrupt it, get the dog doing something else. And if the dog is not listening to that new skill, follow through and make it happen. And then change the scenario, maybe, you know, do something different with the dog or pop them in the crate happily, not in a disciplinary way, for a little bit, but you got to switch things up.
That's really good. So
thanks, Ken.
It applies to all kinds of behaviors.
Oh yeah,
like, you know, all kind, yeah, chewing on stuff. I remember when we were a puppy named Highlight. It's in one of our videos. I don't remember which one, but we were Highlight was Highlight was getting into trouble. She was chewing on this little training bag that her mom had brought for her, whatever. And Kale redirected the dog, turned her away with the house line. But what she did next, Highlight still kind of wanted to go back, and like she's like, oh, yeah, forget it, I'm going to get that thing and chew on the bag. And Kale redirected her and then asked her to sit. And for a moment, Highlight had to sit in position for value. You know, Kale, you got her to sit, and then, you know, you acknowledged the great sit, and then you rewarded her, which is okay. Mm-hmm. But the timing, what was so important about the timing was redirect the dog, get some attention on you, ask the dog to sit. Now they're doing something. Now they've earned a reward, mm-hmm. and Kale rewarded her. Guess what? Highlight didn't go back to the bag because it wasn't worth anything. If she listens to Kale and she just does what's ever asked of her, she's going to be rewarded.
Yeah.
It's a really important way to look at it. But this also leads to our second point. Did you have something you want to share?
I was just going to say, what's really important is that the dog is being put in a position where they now really have to make a decision. So that puppy Highlight that we're talking about, I pulled her away from.
We'll see. So there is it's like freezing rain outside of the train station tonight.
Good old Canada weather.
I know. Hopefully we'll be back in no time. Hopefully we're back. Check, check, check one.
It's back now, 7:55.
Okay. All right. So there's a outside the train station. I mean, you saw the train station when we were coming in, and it is crazy outside right now. There's ice and rain and storming and snowing and whatever. But anyway.
The internet wants sunshine.
Yeah. So do we.
True.
So where were we? Oh, poor management. Poor management. Yeah. Talking about management. What do you think good management means? I want to see it in the chat. What do you think? What does it mean to you to have good management of your puppy? I'd love to hear this, because this is it's something that people overlook.
Yeah. And moderators, can you let us know whether you heard our answer to Norma's super chat? Just let us know that if you can as well. Sorry. I just wanted to make sure.
I forget where we were. That's okay. Talking about poor management. I want to know what these guys think poor management comes down to. Like, what does that mean for you guys?
Yes. So let us know that in the chat. Management is a huge thing. I think sometimes people think that they're managing their puppy, but really they end up getting into a situation where the dog... no, I didn't. Okay, perfect. I'm glad. Perfect. So would you want to just throw Norma's thing back up?
I think that's what it is.
Thank you, guys. We'll circle back for a second to make sure we don't miss anything.
Listen to these guys if you want to do other dog sports. I'm doing agility with my 2-year-old. Think about doing obedience classes first. It really helps you and your dog listen and learn.
Yes. So true, Norma. That's definitely what we're trying to do. We want to make sure that, you know, if you have great control and if you have good, you know, obedience skills, you really can do whatever you want with your dogs. There's endless things. Agility, obviously, is a very favorite one of mine. But yeah, that's an excellent point.
And Mary H. dropped a super sticker, $4, very cute super sticker. And we also grabbed another super chat that had just come in. I'm from Carolyn. Carolyn and... from Melanie. So we've got those. We need to talk. These are the answers. Look at the answers here, Kale.
And thanks, Mary H., for your super chat as well.
Yes, thank you very much. So let's talk about what people think it means to be
good managers. Okay, supervising, eyes on and follow through, come and called, crate and house line, supervising all the time, consistency, be a leader, have patience, follow through, two eyes on them or in the crate, less mistakes and bad habits. Very good, guys. Yeah. You guys have a very good sense for it as well. It's one thing to say it. It's another thing to do it.
Absolutely. This is so important. Yeah, to know what the right choices are and to make those choices are two different things.
Yes, and that's basically good management means when you have a young puppy or if you have a dog as well. Again, age doesn't matter here. What we're trying to do is set up how we are interacting with the dog throughout the day.
Yeah.
And we're doing it in a way that we end up showing the dog, teaching the dog how they should behave in those situations, rather than leaving it to the dog to kind of decide on their own. And typically when you have a young, curious, energetic, non-trained dog, they're not going to magically like go and lie in their bed and, you know, chew in the bone and like sit perfectly at the door and not bark at people when they come in. Like very rarely are dogs just choosing those things all by themselves. That, you know, those types of behaviors we need to mold and shape ourselves. And yes, we need to train our dogs. We need to set aside time to practice with them. But sometimes what happens is we have people that are doing great training and they're doing that multiple times a day, but all of the in-betweeny stuff, they're not managing their dog well. And so what happens is the dogs are getting into things. They're rehearsing having accidents in the house, or they're chewing things when no one's paying attention to them. Yeah. Or they're barking at the window when people walks by because people aren't, you know, no one in the house is stopping them or preventing them from doing that. So a lot of your suggestions are really good, but management is going to be really, really important. I mentioned self-rewarding behaviors before. This is another reason why managing your dog is so important, because if some of those unwanted behaviors are happening that your dog really finds self-rewarding, they're even harder to break if the dog has been rehearsing that, you know, for weeks on end. And now all of a sudden you say, you're not allowed to do that. Then the dogs are like, what? I had so much fun barking at the window when people passed, or barking at the fence when people passed. You let me do that for weeks. What the heck? So managing them from the beginning is a really good idea. The issue is, though, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to do it. And that's why people have a tendency to either not do it or not do it very well, because people want to do things quickly. And that's just not the best way that the dogs learn.
So Polly AG, one of our heart dog supporters said, good management is where your dog chooses you over the distraction. Unlike mine, she's decided to not come when called this week. Help. Now, I want to list the two different parts of this. Good management isn't when your dog chooses you over the distraction. Good management is making sure they can't choose that distraction.
Yeah.
So setting your dog up to be successful, and I have a sneaking suspicion, Polly, that if your dog's been allowed to rehearse not listening, not recalling, not coming when called enough, they're going to think that that's the right choice. Or they're just not going to know that they have to turn. They have to come back to you. So what you need to do is think about your management. At what situation is your dog not responding? And let's just say, I'm going to imagine a scenario. I'm going to say it's maybe outside in the backyard when they go out for a pee or something like that. If that's the case, you need to make sure that you have a line on, a leash or a house line or some way to follow up if they don't make a great decision. But before you do that, I want you to get out there and work on that recall. Work
Teach
on that
them
response
how to
name.
Make a good decision.
Yeah, yeah. Because the training, along with good management, is exactly how you turn some of these disappointing behaviors around. But management is putting your dog in a situation where they can't make the wrong choice.
Mm-hmm.
So really, I love that this came up, because this is really important. People say like, oh, my dog won't listen when I do this, or they go in the backyard and they won't come in when I call them. Well, the management part of that isn't is having some way to do something about it.
Yeah. It's really important that you remember that dogs need to be trained to do the things that we want them to do. And what ends up happening is people give their dogs freedom and then, you know, they call their dog in and they haven't actually done the training. And maybe it works a couple times because dogs are generally quite cooperative. But the issue is when something distracting or something that your dog feels is more exciting comes up, that's when the dogs will then say, I would rather choose that over you. But a dog who's had good management and good training and has been taught that coming to you is valuable, that walking on a loose leash is valuable, that going in their crate and being quiet is valuable, that not jumping up on people is valuable, goes on. Those dogs are dogs that tend to not make the same mistakes. So for that recall comment specifically, you know, what we have a young dog, he's 14 months old now.
And he's the cutest.
He's the cutest little guy ever. But I would say for the first 5 or 6 months of his life, he had endless training of responding to his name and responding to his recall command with me outside, calling him to his favorite tug toy, calling him to his, some treats with a leash or a line on. So he wasn't really tested, quote unquote, tested to come when he was called or to respond to his name. I assumed that he may or may not do it because he was in his learning phase. And so I made it impossible for him to ignore me. When I say five and I take off running with a tug toy, well, he's like, oh my gosh, I can't help myself. I got to come. And so when I do that day after day after day after day after day, I start building value for coming to me so that when he's outside and there's rabbit poop or there's a chipmunk or whatever that goes across the yard and I say five, he has had hundreds of repetitions of chasing me for a reward. It's a no-brainer. He's not going to go after that thing. He's going to go with what he's been reinforced for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of time to the point where it overpowers something that is instinctually fun, like chasing a chipmunk. But the problem is people don't do the training and then they don't manage their dog well and then they end up being allowed to rehearse those bad behaviors.
A lot of people may be thinking that, you're a dog trainer. It's no wonder that you do that. It's no wonder that you get those results. But I'll tell you, with students in,
our students do the same thing.
There's like 64 countries represented, people from all walks of life, all different ages. They're seeing that success too because they have a plan. Because they know that when they go outside, they're thinking steps ahead. They're managing well. They have a line on. They know that there's going to be a training moment that comes up at some point when we're out for a pee or when you go out to whatever, go out and play in the yard, whatever the situation is. They're thinking ahead to the training opportunities. So I want you to start thinking ahead to the training opportunities. And how can you set your dog up to be right? Maybe it's in a quieter yard. Maybe you start one of these skills or behaviors. You work on one of these exercises in your kitchen. I know we have a lot of people are like, well, yeah, good luck. Try that outside. Well, we wouldn't until we get some success inside. We wouldn't until we get some success in a much more controlled environment. And I mean, as I mentioned, there's people from all over the world that join us in apartments in Manhattan and in, you know, rural Idaho and all over the place, countries, you know, all over the world that will go out of their way to set the dog up to be successful, that will find that grassy area that's a little bit quieter. That's all you have to do. That's a big part of how you can be successful. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be a dog trainer.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit. You talked momentarily about kind of about expectations. And although, so we've talked about feeding everything and poor management, things you can change very quickly. Let's talk about expectations. Let's dive down to the bottom of our teaching plan. Because expectations is one of the more frustrating things that I find with the average dog owner that says to me, well, you know, it's a beagle. You can't teach them to walk on a loose leash, or it's a husky. They can't walk without pulling. And then I go over to our class. We have like this beautiful 24-acre facility with huge, built 28,000 square feet of training halls. And I see huskies walking in perfect thing. Perfect heel position into class and out of class. And then I see a beagle puppy come in, do a brilliant recall. You know, it's I don't want you to ever think that because it's a certain breed, I can't do this. Don't ever think that because I thought that. I was exactly like you. I had a Labrador Retriever. That's what took me to McCann, that brought me to McCann Dogs. She was 2 years old, and everybody said, well, you got to wait till they get older for them to listen. That's not the case at all, and I wish I hadn't listened to you know, those myths. Don't blame the dog's inability on their breed, because mm-hmm. that's just out of the question. We see all kinds of breeds come through the classes, and it's about the owner. Do you believe, how bad do you want it to change? And do you believe that you can see some change? The answer should be yes, you do believe, because we see it all the time. Now, expectations isn't just about the breed. Also, you think to yourself, well, they know this. He should be responding. He should be coming in out of the backyard. He knows this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if they're not responding, then they don't know it. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think people either have like too high of expectations, or they're unrealistic, like what you're talking about, where they say like, oh, they should know this, but they actually haven't done the training or the work or the proofing or the practicing to actually know it as well as you think that they do, or their expectations are too low and they just accept subpar behavior from their dog and they don't believe that the dog can, you know, be better. He's just a puppy. He's just playing. He doesn't need to be able to do that yet or whatever. Like, you would be astonished to see what a 12-week-old puppy is capable of doing.
Mm-hmm.
If they're getting good information and they're being motivated to learn. Our puppies know countless tricks by the time they're 12 weeks old, and they I just love it because of how you're training them. So expectations really, really important. Expectations also important among family members. So if you have a dog and you live in a house with other people that are going to be interacting with the dog or training the dog or taking the dog for a walk or whatever, it is important that everybody does have the same or similar expectations of the behavior of the dog, because dogs really crave consistency. They like structure, they like clarity, and it can be a challenge sometimes when there are, you know, one or two people in the house that have this type of expectation for the dog that maybe is higher, which is good, and then there's other people that, you know, aren't following through and sort of allow the dog to be ill-behaved or egg them on or roughhouse and do all those types of things. And then sometimes the dog has a hard time figuring out where they fit in.
Yeah.
So it is a really good idea when you have a young dog to make sure that as a family, you figure out what your expectations are, and that you're able to kind of all be on the same page, because your dog will really, it will thrive a lot more in that type of in-learning environment.
Absolutely. We need to get to some of these super chats.
Okay.
From Carolyn Dingman. Carolyn says, how do I help my puppy be calm around the cat when it's the highest value around? This takes me back to when we had Jungle.
Yes, yes. Yeah, cats can be tricky because they just do what they want. And they can be a challenge for sure. The easiest thing to do with puppies and cats is initially keep the puppy and the cat separated until you can teach the puppy some obedience skills that allow you to have the puppy listen to you better around the cat. So back to that value thing that I was talking before about your recall. You might work on response to name. You might work on having the dog lie on a bed and hold position. You might work on leave it, those types of things. And that needs to be done away from the cat so that the puppy can get really good at it without a lot of distractions. And then once your puppy is reliable without a lot of distractions, you might implement smaller distractions until you can work up to having the cat around. So the separation is going to be really important. And then along with that is it is important that when you have your puppy out and the cat is there, that you are managing your puppy well by having a leash or a line on, or a crate nearby, so that you're not just allowing the puppy to, you know, bother the cat and learn to get high and excited by the cat. So you really need to be consistent that way. So separation, but then also training, and then put both together when your puppy's ready to do so. And it takes, you know, I can't tell you how long it takes. It's really dog dependent, and also dependent on you and your skill set as well.
Follow the offspring, and you got to keep them separated.
I have no idea.
Instructor Alexis, in the back end of the chat, we mentioned that Jungle Machu is offended. Yeah, we did have Machu, and actually Machu may appear working with your dog when with cats are on
yes,
video.
We have a video somewhere on that.
We talked about, but she's right.
Machu is a star.
He was. Much was. Help from Sandra D1. Help. We have a 5-month-old mini Bernedoodle who prefers to jump up on us from behind, backs of legs. It's too hard to correct her in the 1 second needed. Thanks for all you do. So we're talking about, I guess, maybe leash walking in a leash walking situation, I guess.
Or maybe just outside and the dog's doing a bit of dive bombing.
Okay.
So in a situation like this, you need to set your puppy up so that you're ready to correct her within the second so that you can have good timing. So if, for example, you're out and the puppy does this and the puppy is successful at jumping up on you, that's unfortunate, but in that moment, I would quickly turn around and take a hold of the leash and make the puppy sit. And then from there, I would praise and reward. And by reward, I don't necessarily mean food. I mean you could touch or give the dog affection. And then from there, I might have the leash in my hand, be ready, and I might start to move away from the dog and see if the dog will try again. But this time I'm ready. So if I feel the puppy coming up towards me, I can turn around and ask the dog to sit before they have a chance to jump. And I would repeat that several times in a row until that puppy says, I know what you're going to do. You're going to say sit. And then when the puppy starts sitting faster and faster and faster, I can start to reward again. It's changing the value. It's changing the dog's mind to understanding that sitting for you is actually more rewarding than jumping on you. But it sounds like you need to actually set it up so that you can actually train through it so that it's not happening when you least suspect it. And, you know, when you're outside or wherever this is happening, think about how you can stop this setup from happening so the puppy isn't always coming from behind you. Yeah. That's, you know, impossible to stop all of the time. But even if you just do it a little bit more, it will help.
Ash Gallagher. I just need to do a super shout out for Life Skills and Puppy Essentials for giving me all the steps to teach listening, beautiful walking, and epic recall. And I had no experience with dogs. Thank you, team. Yeah, thank you, team.
You're a rock star.
We have an incredible team of instructors that support all of our students, and we all can thank them.
Really thank great. You, Ash.
Yeah, very nice. Thank you, Ashley. It was a very nice super chat. From Melanie Collins, I'm in an electric wheelchair and my 62-pound aggro to other dogs. I have one hand on the controller and one hand on the leash. She's torn both shoulders. Please help. Any ideas? Well, this is a pretty unique situation, especially with limited mobility. But we generally don't issue advice on fear or aggression on this channel. We do that in personal, like private lessons, and we deal with those things very specifically because what we don't want it happen is to tell people that for this one dog, this thing is going to work, and then you go and try it with your dog because you think they're the same and things go wrong. And we just don't, that's sort of a mission statement of our channel is to make sure we're giving you the best possible advice that couldn't put you in a bad situation. But I can mention that maybe a change in equipment would be helpful for you, Melanie. I don't really know the situation. I would avoid situations where you're going to be passing other dogs at this point because you need to work on that. But something like a gentle leader is something that we actually have them custom made for us by the manufacturer so that we have like metal buckles so that they can't slip and slide. But it's honestly like power steering, and maybe one of our moderators can drop a link for gentle leader training for Melanie. Changing the equipment is going to give you an advantage
because then
your
dog,
your dog can't lean into it as much. Now you also need to think about the timing, the what's the trigger. There's a lot of stuff that you need to work on, but at this point, changing the equipment so that you have a little bit, you have power steering, it's going to be helpful.
Yeah, and an issue like this is going to be much better to work on somebody like in person, one-on-one, because it's important to get to know your dog, the reason behind the aggression, if it even is aggression, or if the dog just is, you know, ill-behaved and needs more direction.
There's
just so many angles. So working one-on-one with a person is going to be best. Prevention is going to be key at this point until you can have a chance to work with someone. And I think the gentle leader suggestion is a brilliant one for you.
We've talked about your expectations. We've talked about how the management decisions you should make. We talked about how important it is when you're feeding, the timing of your feeding. We need to talk about, and we talked briefly touched on this, so many new dog owners are asking too many times for some behavior. If you say what you mean and mean what you say. So we talked about setting your dog up to be successful. And if that means that you're going out into the yard with them to teach them to come back in at night, during the day, when it's raining, whenever, you're making sure that your voice has meaning. through management, because you have that leash, you have the situation set up correctly, but asking too much is probably the most common thing I see people do. Some people like sit. Oh, check this out. He loves to sit. And eventually it happens. They're like, see, he knows how to sit.
Makes me cringe. When
the reality is eventually your dog was going to sit. So eventually you would be right. But we want your dog to respond the first time, every time, no matter what the skill is. So be careful you're not asking too much before making sure it happens is basically, you know, you need to have a little follow through. If your dog is right, you should be ready, especially if they're in training, mm-hmm. to praise them and maybe reward them. If they're wrong, you need to know what to do next.
Yeah, I was just going to say, we just literally talked about expectations. Well, this goes hand in hand with expectations. Yeah. If you have high expectations that you really want your dog to listen to you reliably and quickly, this mistake is something that will really prevent you from reaching that goal.
Yeah.
If you are going to just accept calling your dog, you know, 5, 10, 20 times before they stop playing and they come back to you, or if you're going to ask them to sit a million times or whatever, ask them to stop jumping up on the counter a million times before you do something about it, that tells your dog that you're okay with their behavior,
yeah.
because you're not doing anything about it. So repeating commands is a really hard thing. And you need to remember.
We'll see. Okay, I think we're back. It's still storming pretty heavily outside, but I think we're good to go. Okay, we're back.
Anyways, I was just talking about repeating commands and how you sort of do a disservice to your dog by doing that, because you either A, teach your dog to ignore that command, and B, really what you should be doing is teaching the dog from the beginning, this is the command and this is what I want you to do when you hear it, and then you need to repeat that over and over and over again. So repeating commands is really something that's going to damper your relationship and your dog's ability to be a really good listener, because there's no urgency to listen the first time because they know you're just going to keep asking. So try to avoid sounding like a broken record if you can.
Absolutely. Got a super chat from Jess H. Jess asks, train him to lift his leg when he pees? 8 month old and the vet says he's healthy. He ends up peeing on his leg and stomach daily. We know this struggle.
Yeah.
I'll never forget. We had a puppy named Rad a few years ago. And I remember thinking, like, when is he going to lift his leg? Like, he just peed squatting for the longest time, mm-hmm. several months old. Mm-hmm. And then one day, I think he was peeing on a hill. At least that's how I remember it. And I think he lifted his leg. I was like, oh, he's lifting his leg now.
Yeah.
And then after that, you're like, oh boy, they're lifting their leg on everything.
Males do it at all different times. Unfortunately, you can't teach them to do it. They're either going to do it or they're not going to do it. I think sometimes, you know, if you encourage them to go to the bathroom on something that's like a tree or like a hedge or something like that versus like out in the middle of a grassy patch,
yeah.
they're much more likely to start lifting their leg if they're lifting their leg on something. But no, you can't really train them to do it. They're either going to do it or they're not. Most male dogs end up doing it, but the age is completely varies based on the dog and the dog's temperament and all of that jazz. You have to bath the dog a bit more.
We're selling a lot of leashes. I might get in trouble for this.
Our in-person students who have been waiting desperately to get them.
I know. I should have worn the office. Okay. We had another great super chat somewhere here from Amanda Hope. Amanda asks, 7-month-old Boston Bonnie who loves everyone, goes with me to work and train her everywhere. So train her every time she meets someone new isn't realistic.
People have us on their toes with all of these abbreviations.
Yeah. She says, how do I curb her enthusiasm? So talking about like she's so excited anytime she's meeting anyone. So this is going to come down to a management, Amanda. So mentioned she goes with me to work. So let's talk about like a work situation. And let's just imagine like a school or an office or something that's like a little bit more controlled.
It's great that she's friendly and that she loves everyone. That's a really wonderful trait. But we also need to make sure that we have a dog that has manners as well and isn't just obnoxiously pulling and gagging and jumping on everybody and drooling and, you know, all those types of things. Be friendly, but also we need to have manners. So it's going to be important that you work on things like teaching her to sit at your side on a loose leash and just look forward at the distractions without actually reacting.
Yeah.
And when you first train that, you might have to be at a far enough distance that you're puppy is able to be successful. Also, when you're in a work environment, make sure you have a way to give her a break. So, you know, bringing a crate
okay.
or something.
Amanda says she's a dog groomer.
Okay. Bringing a crate so that she can go and hang out in there so that she's not, you know, loose all of the time, which I would imagine you're probably already doing. But that way, when you bring her out on leash, have your treats ready, and yeah. you may just need to stay at a distance, because what happens is if she's excited and she's acting overzealous and she gets to go and people are talking to her in a squeaky voice and they're petting her and they're bending over and she's getting higher and higher and higher, you're just reinforcing her for being a wild woman. So not that we want to diminish her spirit and her light. However, we need to teach her that calmness is actually what's going to earn more
yeah,
people to come and
totally,
see her. So
totally. Yeah, I love that.
We have a really good video where we're working with a young border collie puppy, that one with the target thing.
Yes, that is
with Euchre.
Yeah, stop your dog. Oh, somebody, people ruin your jumping up training or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that would be a really good one for you to watch, because it talks about like distance and what to do when the dog's getting up and pulling and that type of thing. That would be a good one for you to watch.
Liz Jennings, I mean, makes an important factual statement here. Where's the whistle, Ken? I love the fact that you guys love this, because a lot of people hate it, and I think it's just ridiculous and funny.
Ken, you are not tooting tonight.
That's just a little toot for all of you who have asked about the tooting, and I haven't lost my tooter, but I do find it funny because we get a lot of like negative comments on
the
videos.
Stop blowing that whistle.
That's right, that's
right. What does it have to do with dog training?
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't. It has nothing to do with it. It's the stupidest thing.
That's the point.
Yeah, I know. It's just so dumb. Thank you for encouraging the tooting. And Sue K even says toot toot. Dan, maybe.
Toot haters.
Yeah.
Get lost.
Okay, talking about so we've talked about feeding everything, poor management, asking too many times, expectations. Now we must talk about overfacing the dog with challenge. And this is going to be something that applies to everyone who is a dog owner, especially if you have a dog in training. And especially if your dog has started to get some skills. This is often when this happens. The dog starts to be pretty responsive. The dog is, you know, your dog is, you know, listens most of the time.
We missed super chat.
Did we?
Not sure.
Okay, we can come back to it.
Okay.
But for those of you who are overfacing your dog with challenges, we have a couple of ways to look at your situation, ways to look at the environment that will allow you to make better choices with your training. Let's talk a little bit about the 3 Ds.
Yeah. The 3 Ds. The 3 Ds are duration, distance, and distractions, the triple Ds. And it's important to remember them, because they are ways that you can understand whether you're overfacing your dog too much, or there are things that you can use to help proof a behavior to make sure that that behavior is super, super solid. Because eventually you want to be able to do everything with long duration. You want to be able to do them around distractions. And for some of those things, you want to be able to do them at a distance, like yeah. a sit stay or a recall, for example. Recalls aren't very helpful if your dog will only come when they're right in front of you. You want them to come when they're really far away. So a common error that people will often make when teaching new things is they will add those 3 Ds at the same time.
Yeah.
So they'll set out to practice something and they will automatically add too much distance and make it too hard for the dog. Or they'll practice around a ton of distractions. And that doesn't mean that like you physically have put out distractions for your dog. Distractions could mean the environment that you're in. It could mean, are you starting this for the first time and you're like out on the street with your dog, or you're at the park and there's like a baseball game going on, or whatever the situation is. That could be too distracting to for your dog in that moment in order for them to be successful because they're just not ready at that yet? Or are you asking your dog to do that thing for too long? Is your expectation too high of them that you're expecting them to do something too long when they haven't mastered it for 2 seconds yet?
Yeah.
So you need to think about that. And so our suggestion is when you're teaching something new is to start with none of those things, no duration, no distraction, no distance, and those things will help your dog to be successful. And then choose one of the D's to focus on before you start adding the elements in. And sometimes it matters which one you choose, and sometimes it doesn't. It sometimes can be dog dependent, but it, you know, you'll have to figure that out. And then from there, you can add more in. But, you know, being aware of distractions, being aware of your distance, being aware of your duration, that can help you to be a better dog trainer, and that can help your dog to actually be more successful because you're not over-facing them accidentally because you're just a little bit more on top of things.
Yeah, and I see this a lot. I see the questions or comments where people are like, "Well, yeah, good luck. Try this with my dog. As soon as I step out the door, they're pulling."
I will.
Yeah. Well, we wouldn't go outside with that dog because you can't.
We would only do 1D.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Because you can't get the attention. You know, if you feel like you're struggling and nothing's working, then you need to change the situation. So one of those things, either the duration, the distance, or the distraction, is too high. So really consider, like, what is overfacing my dog here? Am I in the wrong spot? The amount of people that mention, like, oh, as soon as we go to the park, the dog is dragging me down the street, or I can't walk by anyone. Well, you need to get lots of repetition in, reinforcement, with no one around. You know, you need to then slowly start to introduce those distractions. Maybe you're not walking on the pathway at the park. Maybe you're at the back fence, or, you know, maybe you're going at a different time of day. Maybe you're walking at the park, but it's like almost, it's evening. It's like late evening. There's nobody else walking there. That's why you're there, because there's less distractions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you build a strong house on a solid foundation. Your training is the same way. You have to have a good foundation of understanding with your dog. Your dog needs to know that if they're here, they're going to be rewarded. There's something in it for them. And maybe that means practicing in your hallway. Maybe mm-hmm. you start in your driveway or your parking lot or wherever.
Mm-hmm.
But somewhere where your dog can be successful, they need to know that there's something in it for them. Because regardless of what we think, it's not natural for a dog to walk in at our side. You know, that's not a natural behavior.
It's not natural for your dog to, like, leave a deer in the forest
that's
and run to
exactly,
you.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's more natural for them to chase after that car or chase after that bunny. That's what they're going to do unless you give them a reason not to. And I think, you know, just remembering that when you're in your training situations, remembering that when you're like, oh man, this is just so overwhelming, this isn't going well,
check your DDDs.
Yeah, that's right. You know, consider the distance, distraction, and duration. The other thing that you can do is,
you're really good at saying that fast,
is have a plan. And having the plan, the right plan for your training, is something Kale's going to talk to you about in our Life Skills or Puppy Essentials
wink,
program.
Wink, wink, hint, hint.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you do have a puppy that is under 4 months, we do have an awesome program called Puppy Essentials.
We actually have tons of students in the chat tonight.
Yeah, we do have lots of students tonight, which is fabulous.
Yeah.
Hopefully we have more students, though, because we have a really great program. We have work on all of the things that you would expect to work on for puppy training, of course, house training, nipping and biting, all of those types of things. But what's really, really great about the program is that there's a huge focus on building a relationship with your dog, all of the things that we're talking about tonight, and really thinking about how to build a solid foundation so that you are starting off on the right foot. Actually, back in the day, this course used to be called Head Start. Yep. And the reason why is because it really, when we start on these exercises at a young age, it sets the tone for the training and it makes the experience for the person and the dog entirely different because of how we lay it out.
Well, and the reality is, you know, people get overwhelmed. What you want
don't know what to do.
That's right. And you want that idyllic puppy experience. You don't want them chewing on stuff. You want to be confident that, you know, they're happy and they're having fun and they're getting enough exercise and that they're learning the right things. That's what you want from your puppy. And that's exactly what Puppy Essentials provides.
Yeah. We have two options for Puppy Essentials. We have in in-person classes that you can come to our facility and train with us. But if you're too far, we also have an online program, and we have worked really, really hard to bring you a very interactive online program, because I think sometimes people think that they're just going to watch videos like you're watching now, but that is not the case. We have an amazing team of instructors that are there to support you 6 days a week, 24 hours, because we have students from literally all over the world. And we really do get to know you and your puppy so we can give you specific advice for them, because every puppy's a little bit different. And sometimes you can't follow the cookie cutter thing and you need some expert advice. We have weekly Zoom calls. We have all kinds of things.
So that you're connected.
Yeah.
So, you know,
yeah. It's really quite cool. Online classes, you can start anytime. You literally could sign up tonight and, you know, get going right away. And if you do in-person classes, you'll just have to contact us to know when classes are starting.
And here's the reality. If you fail the plan, you plan to fail.
That's right.
So we can give you a plan, and we get to hang out on a weekly basis. John asks, what should we do if our dog freezes and refuses to walk when she sees people or other dogs while on the walk? Mm-hmm. So we actually have a really great video that Instructor Carol shot with maybe it was a Maltese. I don't remember what the breed of the dog was, but she talks a lot about like stoppers. We talked about three different kinds of dogs. We've got hoppers, chompers, and stoppers. So it was a fun way to put it together. But for stoppers would be the right video for John. I don't know if there's any other advice you can give him for a dog who's a little bit worried about other people on the
walk. Yeah, I think it is sort of have to determine why the dog is freezing. Is the dog freezing because they're a little bit unsure or whatnot? Redirecting the puppy or the dog is a good thing to do. You could even start off and seeing if the dog will follow treats in that moment, or so you could maybe lure the puppy to get going, or even just lure the puppy up into a sit.
Yeah.
Give them a different job to do that's productive. It doesn't even need to be motion. It could be something as simple as like tucking in and sitting at your side and maybe looking up at you, just to give the dog an opportunity to do something that's worth a reward. Please be careful that you're not inadvertently making the situation worse by consoling the dog. And I do see this quite a bit when dogs will do this. A lot of people will turn to their dog and say, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. And they sort of soothe the dog. And then the dog goes, oh, you like this. Okay, you like this. You're praising me. You're telling me it's okay. You're telling me this is good. So not that you're going to be angry or upset with the dog, but it's better to be just very neutral and matter of fact. You could give a couple tugs on the leash. You could just pull the dog up into a sit and praise them for being brave.
For sure. We talked a little bit
about lots of things you can do.
Totally. That would, Instructor Carol in the demonstration with, I can't remember the dog's name.
It doesn't matter.
Anyway, I think it's helpful. But anyway, she talks about using just constant pressure, just having a slight constant pressure. But what you need to know is as soon as your dog starts moving, praising them along. That video is going to be really helpful for you. The other thing I want you to think about is like, when does your dog put on the brakes? Because you really need to figure out that timing. Because if you can, turn and continue your walk in another direction, if you can, counter condition them that all of a sudden when they see somebody, something fun happens, you might be able to start working away from having that little stopper on every walk and worrying about who's coming down the street the other way.
Yeah, absolutely.
In tonight's show, we talked about feeding everything, poor management, asking too many times, overfacing the dog with challenges and the expectations. And these are the five most common mistakes that new dog owners are going to make. Now that you're not going to make them, I want to ask you, do you play music for your dog? Is that something that you guys do? Something that we do. Yeah, a lot. Even at our training hall in our crate room. Actually, we just got back from traveling. We use music a lot, especially when it was fireworks were going off over the new year.
Yeah.
It was so helpful to have music. And I can tell you that we have specific dog music that we've created. We've worked with some digital collaborators as well as we're having fun just creating little scenes.
Yeah.
But content that's specific to your dog.
So use music for their dogs.
Oh, that's great.
Awesome.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah, so check out the McCann Dogs music channel. Actually, at the end of tonight's stream, you're going to be automatically directed there. It's going to take you directly to a live stream on the McCann Dogs music channel. A huge thank you to all our instructors. A huge thank you for all of the super chats. And one of my favorite parts of the show is the ending.
Yeah, why?
Well, because with all of the teaching, all of the training, all of the things we've talked about tonight, the rest, my friends, well, that is up to you. Happy training.
We do these live streams to educate you, but more importantly, to motivate you. You can have the dog that you've always wanted, but it's just going to take you a little bit of work.
Oh. Oh. Yeah. I would know because I was just like you. Long before I became a dog trainer, I was a frustrated dog owner, but the skills that I learned at McCann's changed my life. Now we have hundreds of videos here on our YouTube channel to help you to have a well-behaved four-legged family member.
But if you want someone to guide you through the dog training process, then you should check out our Puppy Essentials program for puppies under 6 months. If your dog is over 6 months, then you could join our Life Skills program, and our instructors are going to help to make sure that everything goes as smoothly as possible in a really supportive environment.
Now, all of the knowledge about dog training in the world won't help you to be successful unless you get up and you start training. The real question is, what are you going to train next?
Happy training.